Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Steve Pavlik. Steve, how are we doing this week?
We're doing well, Jim. I am still basking in the glow of American exceptionalism after the USA hockey team took it to our neighbors to the north on and off the ice. So really, really enjoyed watching that.
That shows you do not boo the American national anthem. There are repercussions to it.
Decisions have consequences.
That's right. You would think they would be more appreciative of what will soon be their national anthem when they become the 51st state, Steve.
I'm not touching that one, but yeah, there may be some merit to
it. All right, well, let's get going. We have a good show today. We got lots to talk about. It's never an off season in college football. So much going on. We also have today a follow-up from Dad Pavlik last week. Gave his input to the show. We responded to it, and now he's got his response. We'll get to that in a minute. But first, Steve, if you don't mind, could I go into Salty Jim a little bit?
Sure.
This is off. It's our show, Steve, so I do want your – although I do have the tiebreaker vote, okay? I'm like the vice president in the Senate. So if we have a tie vote 1-1, I have the deciding vote. See, all this political stuff, that's in honor of you coming from D.C. But I'm going off topic, Steve, okay? You know what? I want to talk about the weather, all right? Mm-hmm. Now, not really the weather, but weathermen, okay? You're down in D.C. Your weather is a little bit different than what we have up here in Pennsylvania. Typically we get a lot more snow events and so on. But I have perhaps the steepest driveway in the world. So I really agonize over this weather when we get snow. Will I be able to even get out of my house? So the weather app on my phone let me know that this coming Thursday, we were going to get a foot of snow, Steve. A foot of snow. The very next day, I look at their forecast again. You know how much snow they're forecasting now? Zero. Okay, now I understand the weather changes. I get that. But how do you go from 1 foot of snow in your forecast to zero in less than 24 hours?
That I can't explain.
So, you know what? You have two youngsters. Raise them to be meteorologists, Steve. I'm not going to say they can't make a mistake. The fact is they can make as many mistakes as they want. They could make mistakes on the same forecast. They could go foot of snow, no snow, anywhere in between, and there's no repercussions to it. Raise your boys to be meteorologists.
Or commentators on ESPN, it sounds like.
or on our show. We've been wrong on occasion too, Steve. So, but anyway, that's my Salty Jim. You know what? We still have a couple days before Thursday. Who knows? By then it might be a foot of snow anyway again, but that's what we have to deal with. So let's move forward. Last week we did as our show, I named Steve President of College Football, where he could implement anything he wants just with a signature, an executive order, and it was so. But like anybody, as much as you're the president, you're in charge, whatever, there's at least one person who could overrule you, and that's your father. So we had Dad's input. Dad Pavlik had his input last year, last week. He had plenty to say. We had a nice long 2 pages of notes from him. We responded to it, and now he looked to respond to the things that you and I had to say, though, last week. First of all, did he like being part of the show?
He does. He very much likes it. I just remind people he's a lawyer. Find it at the lawyer joke. What do you call 1,000 lawyers at the bottom of the ocean? A good start. So just that's where we have to get constant back and forth going. But a couple of things. One, of course, I was criticized for not capturing his thoughts accurately. Your email, so it's not my fault. Maybe he didn't read it right, but it had to do with the revenue sharing. And his point was, just so I got clarity, as to it doesn't make a difference if you sort of agree that all the schools will basically have the same, let's say $20 million, I think sort of the number been floated around. If you don't address NIL, you're still going to have these disparities. And I think that's a good clarification. And then his other point was more reaction to honestly what you said. I think you made reference to sort of maybe college football going down the path of almost minor league baseball. I think we're talking about the continued education. And I think from his standpoint, that sort of brought up, you know, more his fear of the trajectory and maybe where I was going, where I was sort of, let's just sort of get rip the Band-Aid off and sort of get where I think this is headed, and sort of the two conference structure very similar to the NFL. I think his fear was, does that, by doing that, sort of get away what makes college football sort of unique and special? And that's the idea of, you know, right now, and maybe was it probably the case when you were in school, you know, you went to school and you went to class with the players. You felt, because of that, a sort of allegiance affinity towards them. Versus, you know, with the transfer and, you know, guys coming in, not really taking classes, getting paid so much money, you really not interact with them at that point. How much different is it than just the NFL? And I pointed out, look, there's a lot of money, there's a lot of interest in the NFL, but, you know, again, if that's going to be where you're going, are you really positioned to compete with the NFL? And it was just an interesting opinion. He has a lot of interesting opinions, as he will tell you. But those were two of the ones that were shared with me.
Well, I'd like to hit on a couple of them. Let's do the second part first. And, you know, my reference to minor league baseball, and I don't know, and some people have talked about this, is college football in essence just minor league NFL? And I understand the thought process that way. And I think the big thing with the whole idea of, well, why don't we, as you said, tear off the Band-Aid and essentially make this like professional football? You know, maybe say the players don't have to go to class. They're just on the football team and all that. I think the problem with that is, as much as I do believe pretty much every player that goes to major college football assumes he's going to play in the NFL. And nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, the vast majority will not play in the NFL. And then the vast majority who do make it to the NFL will be out of the NFL within a couple years. So that very special handful that are still in the NFL after the age of 30, that's 1 in 100, 2 in 100. It's not the case. So whether that 18-year-old who goes from high school into college is worried about his academics or not, he should be, because chances are he's going to need that education and need to use that, even if he does go to the NFL.
Well, I think that's sort of where my dad was coming from is, you know, we talked about the idea of letting these guys return to school to get their education, similar to what the minor league system does with baseball. At that point, a lot of people that return from baseball, I knew guys that did it in high school, they sort of value that college education even more at that point. One, they're a little older, it's a little more mature, but also at that point, they've sort of given up on their career or aspirations of going, you know, professional. So sort of a renewed focus as to, you know, hey, now it sort of dawns on me, I really have to focus more on my academics and as I pursue something other than sports.
Well, and to make sure I clarify how this works with baseball, if you're a high school baseball player, there are a lot of players who then they have a choice of going to college or going directly into professional baseball. And I word it that way because it means going to the minor leagues for a while. They may get a large bonus and then go through the minor leagues. And with that aspect of, gee, should I go to college or not? where you might have, I suspect your dad would have been the same as my dad. If I were a high school baseball player and, gee, I'm being offered this amount of money to go play professional baseball, my father would say, what about college? And what the major league teams do, I think it's probably to humor the parents. It's like, hey, part of the contract we could make, we will pay for his college. He's given up the college scholarship, but we will pay for his college schooling where, whenever that time comes, if it starts through the offseason or after his career, but we will foot the bill for it. So they're still placing a value on college education. And that leads back to what your father suggested last week about it's not just a four-year scholarship. I'm not sure how many years he put in some kind of time limit. Candidly, for what it costs the university, I say, make it a lifetime thing. Look, Steve, we want you to play football at our campus. Now you have 4 years of eligibility, 1 year redshirt, but it's also a scholarship. If you don't get your degree while you're here, you could always come back and get it. To me, I think that would be a good way to do it, and it would help a lot of these student athletes.
I think it would. I guess where I'm just sort of wondering out loud is, how does that work in this era of the transfer portal? You know, do you have to stay at the school in order to retain that? You can't transfer elsewhere, because at that point, the school's going to be like, well, you left. We're not going to be bound to give you a degree since you left our program. And does the new program honor that? I don't know.
That's a great point. And I think here's my answer to it. And it's something, I don't know if your dad put it in his notes, but I think there has to be contracts between the player and the university. Now, I don't think it should lock the player in forever. I think, you know, like 3 years, because you could redshirt, play 2 years, then be allowed to transfer, and you still have 2 years of eligibility and the freedom to move. But as part of that, if you stay in our program for 3 years, you get the academic portion of the scholarship. How's that sound?
Sounds good to me. Again, I think you can negotiate these things. And then we're talking about, you know, with respect to how much these players are going to be paid. That was sort of the other issue he had, just with what we're talking about, you know, just clarifying that, what does that revenue look like outside of what would potentially be shared between the universities with NIL?
Well, I'll tell you what, we're coming up against the break here. I did have in my notes your dad talking about NIL and how that compensation will work. I have some thoughts on that too, that we'll get to as soon as we get back after the break, because NIL is a little tough to legislate. We'll talk about that when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Steve Pavlik, I'm Jim Galante, and in spirit, Dad Pavlik is with us also. He contributed to the show last week, responded then after we responded to him with a few things. And I love these topics because I think they're great, and they we're approaching things that really matter. And I do believe academics still matter. It sounds like your dad still feels that way too. And we were talking about, he brought up NIL and how that gets distributed fairly. But I think partly in getting there, Steve, we were talking about, you know, your academic scholarship stays with you forever. You know, you could go back and take classes is what we would recommend. But you need to collectively bargain this, meaning essentially a union of the players collectively bargain. And this is something like what the NFL or Major League Baseball has, which is you are tied to that first team for X number of years before you become a free agent. I think if you did that within football for, say, 3 years, it gives you a redshirt year, 2 years of playing, and still the freedom to move on and transfer wherever you want. So there's a balance there. But if you, as part of that contract, because I'm committing 3 years to the university would commit to me the academic portion of the scholarship. Now, your dad brought up the NIL money. We're going to have a situation, it looks like, where the universities can pay the players, but NIL is separate from that. And I don't think that's one that the school, the conference, the NCAA will ever be able to legislate, because it's not a contract in any way or an agreement between the player and the school or the NCAA. It's, hey, ABC Car Company comes to Steve and says, Steve, I want you to be on a commercial for our, you know, car dealership. You say, okay. That's something completely separate and independent of the agreement with the school, Steve. So I don't think there's any way you're going to change that. Arch Manning's going to make a lot more money than Joe Schmo.
No, I'm not really sure how that you can address it. I mean, there's a quote I think attributed to Andrew Jackson with talking about, you know, being upset with the Supreme Court ruling. And he said, well, let's see him try to enforce it. I don't believe he actually said that, but that's sort of more or less. But it's sort of the issue right now is who's really going to enforce this, particularly as the NCAA is becoming more recognized for the clown show that it's been for many years.
Well, that's it. They will lose in court. There is no doubt. They will lose in court.
They lose in the court all the time. I don't even know why they keep filing lawsuits.
Well, it's like I always say, I enjoy sports gambling. I wish there was a way I could bet against the NCAA every time they go to court, because I would bet on them losing, except I think the odds makers also know that, Steve. So it would be hard to make too much. But, I think, though, I don't really care. Because this is, you know, your dad talks about how the NFL shares revenue, and it's true. And actually, in college football, if you look at it, the conferences share their revenue also. Vanderbilt makes the same as Georgia. You know, Northwestern makes the same as Ohio State for being in the conference. So, you know, a lot of those resources are there. It always, you know, Northwestern, that's a rich school with a lot of rich alumni. Boy, if they really wanted to, they could put a lot of money into their sports programs if they wanted to, Steve. And sure. I don't have a problem with that.
No, I don't either. I mean, it's a free country. You should be able to spend money on resources the way you want to, in my opinion. I guess I was sort of thinking as you're mentioning those schools about how much more money they get than like a Clemson or Florida State or Miami, just in terms of the revenue contract, just again, polarization between the SEC, the Big Ten, and then everybody else.
Well, one of the things that's interesting in mentioning the ACC, where Florida State and Clemson want to abandon the conference, but one of the things, they're trying to work out an agreement, with that agreement being, hey, look, if you succeed, which has been their complaint, you know, Florida State, Clemson, we're the ones who win everything and we have to share the revenue. They're making it so if you win, you keep more of the money if you make appearances in the playoffs, which I think is a great way to do this. And, you know, I think we've talked about SMU went into the ACC as part of their agreement. They were taking nothing, but because they made the playoffs, they're actually going to make the money that way by making the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, you can make a similar case if you're Ohio State. You know, they tend to, unfortunately for us, succeed more often than not. And why are they making the same amount of revenue as Northwestern? You know, I'm sure that Georgia and Alabama's of the world feel that way about Vanderbilt. So if the ACC is successful in that, I just wonder if that's going to trickle over to the other conferences.
I wouldn't be surprised by it, but it's also part of this argument that people make about, you know, would the Big Ten the Southeast Conference and the best teams that from the ACC, you know, the Florida States and Clemsons and the big schools separate, create their own divisions or conferences, but and then drop, you know, the Vanderbilts, Northwesterns. I always say I don't think that will happen if they think it through, because there will always be somebody at the bottom. So if it's not, you know, Purdue and Northwestern at the bottom because they got kicked out of the league, well, guess what? Then it'll be Maryland and Rutgers who will be at the bottom. And if they drop out, then it'll be, who knows, you know, Illinois and Wisconsin as you keep working your way up. Somebody will always be at the bottom. And I always say that's actually a good thing, because the Ohio States, Michigans, or whoever's at that next tier, they need some wins.
Maybe.
Well, it's kind of like the Giants and Jets in the NFL. They're good to have in there to lose. So, all right. Let's segue to a new topic here, Steve. And I send you this information, and I'll admit I'm plagiarizing this. I'm taking this from The Athletic, which, by the way, I really like. They have some great college football writers, and they get a mailbag, and someone asked a good question of one of their writers, which was, can you set, and he did all of college football, put them into five tiers. Tier one being they expect to win a national championship every year. Tier two, now with a 12-team playoffs, they expect to make the playoffs. They hope to compete for a national championship every couple of years. I'm not going to go through the other tiers, but here's how he classified the tiers. Tier one, Alabama, Georgia, and Ohio State. First of all, let's start with that, Steve. Any issue with putting those three teams in a tier above everybody else?
Sort of. I mean, Ohio State to me is in almost a class by itself, in the sense that as long as I can remember, that program is always competing more or less for a national championship. I mean, they've had how many coaches go through there and win a national championship? To me, that says more about the program than anything else. And it predates me going back to Woody Hayes. The other programs, I'm not sure you can say that about just from that longevity standpoint. So Alabama had a unique situation. That's why I don't know that I would no longer keep them in that area, that top tier, just because with Nick Saban, he was probably the best coach in my lifetime for more or less two decades that he was there on the scene as a major college football coach. And, you know, I just think one of the reasons that Saban may have decided to get out when he did is this new era with NIL and the transfer portal that disrupted what made Alabama special. Saban had a system, I think he called it the process, and part of that process was getting people ready and more increasing their eligibility for the NFL. That's harder to do now in this era with you can't stack talent with the NIL and the transfer portal. And so I just don't know that Alabama is going to be in the position that they were with Saban moving forward. So that's why I'm not sure that I would keep them up there. I think they're going to struggle through that. Look, they struggled a long time. I mean, you had the Bear, then you had to get to Stallings. Then it was a long time between Stallings to Saban. So in terms of their resources compared to the other SEC schools, I don't know that they have a competitive advantage there. Georgia is interesting in that I think where they are positioned right now is very good. You have a lot of talent. You've got just migration growth there in the state of Georgia. They don't have a lot of competition to compete with there in that state. So I think their expectations are they've had a lot of success. We talked about Alabama not necessarily being in that tier. So I think I could see a case for them to remain at the top tier. So of the three, I guess, Georgia, Ohio State are fine. I'd probably move Alabama to tier two.
It's interesting, and some of this is generational. You know, you mentioned you don't remember a time when Ohio State wasn't at this level. Maybe because I do, I could look at them and say, yeah, there was a time when they weren't, you know, this way. And but it's right now, Ohio State, as you said, in your adult lifetime, Ohio State's always been there. Alabama, it's been, well, the entire Nick Saban era, what was that, 10, 12, 14 years, they were there. So I think if you look at it in this snapshot in time, a year ago, I suspect you would not have had a problem with Alabama being there right before Saban resigned.
If Saban was still the coach, I would have kept them there. I just think there's a lot of uncertainty, and that's more of a credit to Saban than anything else.
Agreed. And I think that's the, you know, will this mark that point where they will fall at least a little bit? And I think we could ask the same thing about Georgia. Georgia probably for the last, what, 5 years has been, you know, the best team in the country or that had the best program over the last 5 years. But is that enough to keep them in that first tier?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Smart's a good coach, and he has a good thing going there. Everything's changing now as a result of the changing landscape, but I think they've probably adjusted as well as anybody. If anything, I think they benefit more just from Alabama taking a step back. I guess, you know, I think of Ohio State. I mean, I think if you or I were coaching that team, they would get 10 wins. It just seems like whoever is there, you roll out of bed, and Ohio State wins at least 10 games a season. The exceptions being that 1 year, I think Fickell was the interim coach, and I guess the COVID season, they didn't play 10 regular season games, even though they still made it to the Big Ten championship. So I guess that's sort of been my experience in my adult lifetime. Now, one thing I will say is early on when Penn State joined the Big Ten and you were competing every year against Ohio State, those two programs, in my opinion, I remember just being on par. And that's not only just through the 90s, but the early 2000s. It's just they have maintained that, I guess, cut above the rest since then.
All right, we'll pick up this conversation when we come back, Steve, for quarter three. Stay tuned. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, Enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m., and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Steve, I'm Jim. We are talking college football. And Steve, when we were finishing up quarter number two, the topic of the conversation was, I had seen this article in The Athletic, actually it was a mailbag kind of thing, and the writer classified teams throughout the country into tiers, five different tiers. I was just looking at the first two tiers. Tier one being the teams that expect to win a national championship every year. They think they could compete every year for number one. And he only put three teams there, Alabama, Georgia, and Ohio State. And you had a very interesting answer in reviewing that, saying that you thought Ohio State was a level above the other two. And I think the great point that you made is Ohio State's been good through several coaches who have won a national championship, and Alabama was good for like the last decade or so with Nick Saban as coach. Georgia's been good for maybe the last 5 years with Kirby Smart as the coach. So really, we don't know if it's really the program or the coach that's doing it.
Yeah, there's only another one program I can think of. My guess is they're on tier two because I haven't seen the article, and that would be LSU. I don't think they've had the same duration of success as Ohio State has, but they've also had multiple head coaches win national championships here. Nick Saban was obviously one. I think he elevated the program, but then you had coaches that I would say are much lesser in quality to Saban with respect to Les Miles and Ed Orgeron go on and win national championships there too. So I still would have Ohio State separate above them, but that's just another program where I think of, okay, they pretty much have a system in place that you can almost plug and play the right person, or not necessarily dependent on the right person. Just most people come in there and based on what they have going, are probably going to win 9 or 10 games. But with those expectations that they're not interested in, from a fan perspective, winning 9 or 10 games, they want to win them all. They want to win a national championship.
Well, I think there are programs with the resources that get you there. And, you know, if you're Nick Saban, I don't think Nick Saban goes to Rutgers and wins a national championship. Now, his name would help him in recruiting, of course. And maybe we're going to find out, you know, with Bill Belichick and North Carolina, just how important that name value and coaching value is if all of a sudden North Carolina starts winning conference championships and competes for a national championship.
Yeah, the Belichick story is going to be interesting to follow for a lot of reasons, not to mention that he's bringing most of his sons in there to coach with him, which will be an interesting dynamic. But I sort of think about, you know, what North Carolina program had with Mack Brown. This was a guy who was actually known for being a pretty good recruiter. It wasn't known as for being the best X's and O's guy. So if North Carolina's able to keep most of that talent that Brown accumulated, could you have somebody like Belichick to come in and say, hey, I can do something with the talent this guy built. He just didn't know how to use it. My background may not be necessarily the best recruiter, but if I can go in here and work with what Mack Brown left me and have some success, then maybe that'll recruit itself. I don't know.
Well, and then also, how much is their name value? And I didn't think this Belichick coming to college. I still am not sure. And if I had to bet on it, I'm going to say I don't think it will work. Okay, but with that said, everything I'm reading now and what he's doing, he is being active in the recruiting front, where it's not just that name value, he's putting the effort into that. And but it will be interesting to see, because, you know, a little bit of a preview of tier two, North Carolina is not in tier two. But if Belichick could get North Carolina competitive and a playoff type team, that would really just say what the value of a coach can be to a program.
It is, and I won't share the specifics, but if I had to generalize it, a lot of the texts I got when Belichick was going over to North Carolina were pictures of him and his college-age girlfriend saying that he's already had experience doing a lot of recruiting in college, and that it certainly won't be that different.
Well, the 24-year-old girlfriend, it just like, the jokes kind of write themselves. So I'm kind of enjoying that whole thing. But getting back on topic, it's interesting how you view the Alabama, Georgia, and Ohio State. I think the Alabama and Georgia thing, we'll find out with Alabama having lost the coach. But I think the common thread among those three teams is just how powerful they are recruiting. And that's the huge difference. Now, let me give you the tier two, and we can talk about those teams. You already mentioned one, LSU. And I think LSU has so many things. They have the support, the stadium, the recruiting territory, the conference they're in. It really is just dependent. Can they get the coach? You know, they thought Kelly was the right guy that they brought in. Maybe, maybe not. But let me go through the names of these teams in tier two. LSU, Texas, Oklahoma, Florida, Michigan, Oregon, Penn State, USC, Notre Dame, Clemson, Florida State, and Miami as teams in that next pecking order. What are your thoughts on those names?
I don't think Florida State belongs there anymore. I mean, I think that's as a program really just taking a step back. The others, I don't really have an issue with sort of being grouped in there. Although there are definitely disparities. I mean, you think about Oregon, you think about the financial resources, clearly no issue there. I think about Michigan and Notre Dame, two programs that irritate me greatly. Well, I mean, part of that is because they go through cycles. I think Lou Holtz used to talk about this where, you know, at Notre Dame and probably to a lesser extent at Michigan, you know, they try to hold themselves out as holier than thou with these academic standards that they claim to have for the program and players. But that sort of comes and goes, where the best time to come in as a coach is when the program has been losing because their standards sort of drop. And then they start winning, they start to get enforced a little bit more. So that's sort of maybe unique a little bit more to those programs. You know, I think this is a big year for Penn State. I mean, they're going all in. And, you know, we talk about the new coaching hires. They got a new running back coach. I think last week when we were speaking, they just announced that Jawan Sider was leaving. You know, and I think from something that's been holding maybe Penn State back, this idea of the alignment, you know, that I think Franklin likes to talk about, having the financial resources and commitment to, you know, get the facilities, now to have the coaching staff to go out and compete. And one of the things Franklin does, it doesn't always endear himself to the fan base, at least people like me, is it always comes across as whining and complaining about what he doesn't have. Well, now you're at a point where you're not going to be able to say that for much longer. So, you know, you have a lot of resources in place for the program this year. And, you know, we've talked about high expectations. And if they're not met this year, you know, I think people will start to question, well, maybe the issue's the guy at the top.
Well, also, I want to address that with Penn State. But first, in looking at this tier two, I think there's some programs here who, you know, I remember when they were – I remember when USC was perhaps the best program in the country. There were different times when Oklahoma was the best program in the country. We know Michigan, we know Miami, there was a time they were the best program in the country. And I think some of this putting them in that tier two is – boy, USC, name value, a blue blood. They've got a great recruiting territory. Even if we haven't seen it in a while, this is a program that should be thinking that way.
I think that's right. I mean, I admittedly didn't read the article. And I assume, you know, you talk about the tiers where they've been ranked. You probably also talk about maybe the tiers, T-E-A-R-S, from a fan perspective, as to what their expectations are, whether realistic or not. And I think some of these programs you mentioned have had, you know, prior success. And I think that's from creates an expectation amongst the fans. Well, we've done this before. And some of these programs just happened multiple times. You know, Oklahoma, you've had success. Going back to the Switzer days, you had sticks with Bob Stoops. So it's sort of like, we can do this. You know, why aren't we there? There's that frustration. I mean, Miami's have been through that. I think Florida, you know, they're maybe on the downslope now. Obviously, they've had success recently, going back to when Urban Meyer was there, all winning national championships. So I think it's sort of, you know, everything's there. We've done this. Maybe that's sort of a good way to think about, you know, what these tiers mean in terms of fan base expectations.
Well, and there are cycles that they go through. I mean, it's, again, if you want to compare like to the NFL, you know, the Patriots had their time. Well, their time was up. You know, the Packers have had their time, the Cowboys. And, you know, you talk about that. But right now, the teams, I think, that are in that upswing, like there was a time, Texas, again, the recruiting, the fan support, the size of the school, the history, the blue blood, they have everything in place. We hadn't seen that in a few years. They appear to be on the upswing. You know, they've been in the playoffs the last couple of years. The other schools that I think you could look at as on the upswing right now, Penn State, Oregon, and Notre Dame. Oregon just won a Big Ten championship. Notre Dame went to the college championship game. Penn State got to the semifinals and was able to bring much of their talent back going into 25. They appear to be spending the money, coaching staff, coordinators, position coaches. So in the really immediate future going into 25, Texas, Notre Dame, Oregon, and Penn State of tier two are the teams that I think are on the upswing.
I think so. I also think going back to expectations, one common theme through most of the schools you mentioned are very enthusiastic and wealthy donor bases. And so now it's not like it was previously where you had to go through cycles where, okay, we have to have the right quarterback and recruit around that. And it could take a while, where it's more like, well, no, it's NIL. We'll just cut checks, get what you need and deliver results. We'll find somebody who will. I just think this patience for coaches now in the NIL era, so it's probably going to be shorter than it had been.
I think that's a good point also. And we saw that, you know, like Texas A&M is the school that I usually hold out there as fan expectation, money given, recruiting territory. They brought in the big name coach and Jimbo Fisher, a national champion. And what did it get them? they were not even listed, Steve, in this tier two. So when we come back, I want to follow up on this. I want to ask you, okay, what does it take to get from tier two to tier one? And we'll talk specifically about Penn State when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Steve. I'm Jim. We're talking about college football, and we're talking about the different tiers within college football. Who's the elite? Who's the very top? I was putting out an article that I read that had Alabama, Georgia, and Ohio State. Steve pointed out what Ohio State and made a good argument about Ohio State being above the other two because they've done it through multiple coaches, which tells you a lot about the program. What I find interesting, Steve, as we started to talk about the second tier, and just to repeat them again, LSU, Texas, Oklahoma, Florida, Michigan, Oregon, Penn State, USC, Notre Dame, Clemson, Florida State, and Miami, those teams are at different tiers right now. And the question is, you know, how do they, who's closer to getting to tier one? Maybe there's a tier 1.5, and who are the teams now? And I think, you know, Penn State and Oregon and Texas have shown themselves to be, you know, in that on the cusp, perhaps. And that's based on what happened this past year. I do want to ask you, though, about your thoughts on Clemson, because a couple of years ago, Clemson probably would have been listed in that tier one. They now seem to be solidly tier two. And is that one of those programs that it was just the coach, the program, a couple quarterbacks, everything just came together at the same time?
Yeah, I mean, he had two great quarterbacks and Sweeney, and you have two great quarterbacks. He had some great defensive linemen, too. I mean, if you had me said, okay, your two positions, you can only have two but have exceptional players, I would take quarterback and defensive line and probably have a lot of success with that, as Sweeney did. I think he's gotten some criticism for how he's approached the transfer portal, and it seems like he's starting to maybe adjust to that, some of his coaching hires as well. So, you know, we'll see whether Sweeney can get back to where he was. But I guess, you know, to his credit, at least he was there. Maybe take a slight shot at Franklin for that. But, you know, Sweeney got two generational quarterbacks, was able to utilize them and win national championships.
And, you know, through the years, different teams, and on this, USC at one time was the best program in the country, perhaps. You know, Penn State, back earlier in the Paterno era, you know, he had back-to-back undefeated years. He had like three undefeated seasons over a six-year span, didn't win a national championship. But then, you know, from, say, 76, 78, 9 through 86, he had multiple national championships. He played for from the span from 79 to 86, if I have my numbers correct, two national championships and two runner-ups. You know, so there were those eras, but now we are in the era we are in now. It's transfer portal. It's NIL. Looking at those teams in that tier two, what does it take for those teams to maybe approach a tier one team, Steve?
I mean, I think the short answer right now is resources. And by that, I mean money. I think that's where this, unfortunately or unfortunately, depending on perspective, it is what it is. And so that's where, again, I go back to LSU is the tier two team that's most comparable to Ohio State in that they've won national championships with multiple coaches, two of whom are pretty unremarkable when you consider Les Miles and Ed Ogeron. So I think that's a program from a resources standpoint. You know, they're similar to Ohio State in the sense that they're the only major school in that state, which, you know, goes a long way. That may mean less now as we're doing like national recruiting. We think of Ohio State, there's really no other school on par with it. When you look at some of the other programs, that's not always the case. You know, you think sometimes we're, you know, hey, Penn State, well, Pitt may not be necessarily on par with Penn State. They've had some great players that had they come to Penn State, that might have made the difference to trying to get over the hump. So, you know, I don't think that should be dismissed. But I think the other programs, you know, you mentioned in terms of this season, I think clearly Penn State expectations are high. Oregon were close last year. You know, again, I think with Phil Knight and his checkbook, you know, expectations are probably high. Texas is on the cusp. So Texas to me is interesting because that's sort of a situation where you can almost have too much talent. You know, I know they have a lot of money like A&M, but you know, I think about that quarterback situation where, you know, they had Quinn Ewers last year and Arch Manning on the bench and some of the dissension behind the scenes as to, you know, well, a lot of money is going to Manning. They want to see their guy on the field. So again, money doesn't solve all problems. And even recruiting talent doesn't always necessarily solve all the problems. So I think that's something to consider as well.
I think that's part of it. To me, the most important aspect of winning is how do you recruit? Are you bringing in your guys, top-level guys, training them to play your way? And go from there. And I think that's the common thread with Alabama, Georgia, and Ohio State. Now, through the last couple of years, you saw Michigan win their national championship when they kept their team together. It was retention of talent. Ohio State, they recruit well. They, you know, had a top-level coordinators. They retained their talent and they used, you know, the portal to bring in even more talent, and they somehow got it all to work together. I think that's the formula that Penn State is trying to use. Remember, this group this year, I mentioned earlier, their 2022 recruiting class, they kept many of those guys around now into 2025, which we did not expect to happen. You know, highlighted with Drew Aller and Nick Singleton. So I think it's that retention of talent along with, yeah, it looks like Penn State's now willing to spend the money like other schools. We saw that with bringing in the new coordinator, paying Jim Knowles more than anybody. And at least on the surface, it appears that they brought in a very good running backs coach, and they're going to pay him, Steve.
Yeah, although I don't think they have to pay him until next year, if my understanding is correct, because I think he's still getting a nice severance from Temple this year. That's something that Saban used to actually deploy pretty well. We get these coaches from other schools that were still, I guess, collecting their severance or whatever. And because of that, Alabama didn't have to pay them much. So I thought that was pretty interesting. Look, just quickly on that, I think it may be an upgrade at running back coach. I think from the perspective of Singleton and Allen, after you've been coached by my experience, a particular coach for a few years, you've really pretty much picked up all you're really going to learn from that person. So have a fresh perspective, I think, is that's something good. I think the fact that we have some head coaching experience here, now people point out that his record as head coach at Temple wasn't necessarily stellar, but you know, I think just, again, the more Franklin can surround himself with some of these other coaches that have had head coaching experience, I think that's a benefit to him and the program. And a coach that's done really well recruiting in the Pennsylvania area. And I think he's won national championships at Florida and Ohio State, developed some big-time running backs there that he can point to. So, you know, I think given the situation that Penn State found itself in, they made lemonade out of a lemon.
I want to get back to that, but just, you know, a last thought on this, you know, getting to that tier one level and some of these schools we talked about, like Texas and LSU, and someone who wasn't even on that list, Texas A&M, I think just throwing money at the problem is not always the answer. And, you know, the analogy to me is baseball often. Teams that just throw crazy money at free agents, that doesn't necessarily win you championships. A lot of it is developing your own talent, which is analogous to, you know, high school recruiting. So now, you know, flipping this over to Penn State, and I know you're not the biggest James Franklin fan in the world. I get that. But I do think he's putting together the correct process, the retention of talent, investing in his coordinators. You know, a year ago, Andy Kotelnicki came in and was probably one of the huge names available, or who technically he wasn't even like on the free agent market. He was employed by Kansas and didn't get ahead, went offensive coordinator to offensive coordinator, but Penn State, I'm sure, offered him a lot more money. We saw that with Jim Knowles. Where I'm headed with this, Steve, how important is the position coach, though?
I think the position coaches are important. I mean, we've seen, just look no further than wide receiver, how a lack of consistency there has contributed to a problem that unfortunately could be this team's Achilles heel heading into a season that otherwise should be pretty promising. So, you know, I don't think that should be dismissed. I just maybe question how much of this is Franklin, how much of this is Pat Kraft. Again, Sandy Barber was abysmal. See her go could have happened too soon as far as I'm concerned. So I think having Pat Kraft here to really have this commitment, you know, I think the president of the university deserves some credit here too, just allocating the resources to get these coaches. And I think you're right. You don't just throw money at the problem, creating a system here that rewards players that have been, you know, meaningful contributors, keep them in the system. That's too. But again, whether that's Kraft or Franklin, I'm not sure. I guess I'm questioning how much credit I would give to Franklin on that. Where I see, though, is at this point, Franklin has everything. He has the coaches he wants. He's got the players to come back. You know, last year was supposed to be the season. It wasn't the best, a lot of money to make it this season. At some point, you know, what more does the guy need where you just say, we've given you everything, maybe you're not the guy?
Yeah, you know, I think it's a little more nuanced than that. And again, I don't know, can you compete recruiting-wise with Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State? Franklin is always called a good recruiter. And if you believe that he is, like I said, I think it's one top 10 recruiting class. Maybe I'm damning him with faint praise or just damning him because he's not able to recruit, you know, a top 10 recruiting class. But when you mention Pat Kraft, which I think is very important, for years, James Franklin has asked for more things, facilities, money for coaches, and so on. And I think Penn State fans did not respond to that well. But now with Kraft in place, it appears he's getting those things that he was looking for. So, you know, was it just that awful tasting medicine James Franklin was recommending to us? Maybe we didn't like the taste of it, but it's really what we needed for our own good if we wanted an elite top tier team.
Maybe, but I go back to, you know, Franklin always come across, at least to me, as sort of like whining and creating excuses for why he wasn't getting to that elite status. He was the one that said the term great to elite. So at this point, he has not proven himself to be an elite coach. Now, he may try to point to all those things why. I just think there's going to be fewer excuses moving forward now that they've given him, here are the best assistants, here is the financial commitment to ensure that you have a competitive roster moving forward. Look, if he decides that he's not the guy, then to his credit, if you want to give him credit for this as opposed to Kraft, he will create the Penn State head coaching position to be much more attractive to maybe, again, incentivize some other coach to come in that can take Penn State to the national championship.
That's the final word for today's show. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.